today's subject that Mr. Yerout will be speaking on is It's Tough to Be a Teenager. Okay, now I'd like to introduce Mr. Yerout.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be back in East Valley High School once again. I was here several years ago. If you're still here, you've got a problem. Hey, you know, it is tough to be a teenager. It always has been and it always will be for some very basic reasons, because during your teen years, and I'm talking about the early part of your teen years, you go through all these interesting biological, physiological, psychological, sociological changes, and that's enough to make you a little bit dingy. And then beyond that, you see, I don't believe the average adult today understands what it's like to be a teenager and face some of the things that you do, like the drug culture, ecology, the possibility of atomic annihilation. And then beyond that, I believe far too many American children grow up in homes where their parents are not making it, and that's like wipeout. Father Theodore Hesburgh, who happens to be the president of Notre Dame University, has said, in my judgment, a very significant statement, quote, "The best thing that any father could ever do for his children is love their mother." And I think on the other side of that coin, the best thing a mother could do for her children is respect their father. But you know I can understand why a lot of wives in American culture have a little difficulty respecting their husbands. Because it seems like in too many marriages, after it's gone for a little while, the average husband starts looking at his wife in this fashion. She's the pot washer, the diaper changer, his sex partner when he's in the mood, and the rest of the time she's the old lady. You know something, if I were a woman married to that kind of a clod, I would kick him where it would do the most good. I'm delighted to tell you, young men and women today, that I have been married to the same woman for 25 years, and we're not looking, and our relationship gets better and better. Wow, it's fantastic. Now, I know that's not like statistics, but that's the way it is in my marriage. In fact, you know, I travel about 220 days out of a school year, and I've got news for you. When I'm out on the road traveling, I'm not chasing every broad up and down the street in every town I visit. Because, frankly, I wouldn't trade 5 minutes with some chick off the street for the relationship it took 25 years to build with my wife. In fact, when I'm home, she and I might like be sitting on the Davenport, watching TV or talking. Would you believe after 25 years, I'm sitting there holding her hand. I'll sneak a little kiss. I've got a kid in the eighth grade, and that just wipes him out. Boy, look at Mom and Dad making out at their age. I say, what do you want me to do, punch her in the mouth? Well, gosh, I guess not. You know, a lot of adults, when they find out I lecture on the campus, say, oh, wow, that must be frightening. Where's the scariest place you talk? A college? No, I don't mind a college. A high school? That's my favorite place. Hey, the scariest place I ever go to speak is a junior high. I mean, like in suburbia, you know, where they sometimes take 2,000 and 3,000 kids, grades 7, 8, 9, put them on one campus. It's unreal. I mean, all it is a miniature college. They subject them to pressures they know they can cope with at that age. For example, they have a full-blown inter-school sports program. They've got student officers, student council, student government. They, you know, they have parties and dances, and they're involved with drugs, and they get drunk. They have sex sometimes twice. And, you know, I think the reason the pressure's so great at that age level is because girls, generally speaking, mature about 2 years ahead of guys. But I want to warn you, young ladies, when the fellas catch up, they're always trying to make up for lost time. But, you know, if you're a girl and you're about 13 years old and you live in suburbia and attend one of these swinging junior highs, you've got a problem. Because so many of these little gals have been programmed by television, modern romance magazines, movies, and in too many cases by their mothers to believe that they ought to have a social life. Ooh, I got to get me a man and swing. And usually to help the seventh graders launch their social life in those big situations, they sponsor us, get a quite a dance for these people at the start of a new school year. All the little girls dress up in their new overalls and go to the dance. You know, the only reason a seventh grade boy would ever go to a school dance or any other kind of a dance is his mother makes him. I don't want to go to that dumb dance with those stupid girls. You get on there, kid. Boy, the girls are down the gym, psyched out of their minds. They're going to launch their social life. Hi, fellas, where'd they go? Because by then, all the boys are hiding under the bleachers. That's why they have to have so many chaperones. You guys get out here and dance with these girls. Golly, you mean I gotta touch them? Now, seventh grade boys do touch girls. They shove them in lockers, push them downstairs, hit them with snowballs, and they especially enjoy chasing them with dead birds. Hey, but gals, have you noticed how the guys change after about 3 years? Oh, baby. Now, girls, I know it's exciting when your date brings you home and kisses you goodnight at the door. Hey, but girls, have you ever noticed when you come in from a date how your parents have turned on the porch light, the spotlight, and the floodlight? In fact, they're leaning out the window with a flashlight, you know? And if you're unfortunate to have younger brothers and sisters, they're all hiding under the porch. Now, the goodnight kiss at the door tastes like more, but there is no way that you can hang around your front door, so young people all over America, including at East Valley High School, you cotton pickers all have these favorite little hideaway places that you enjoy going on the way home from a date for that pause that refreshes, and I'm not talking about the Uncola. Hey, girls, isn't it interesting when a guy is taking you out for the evening, he has no trouble at all finding your home when he comes to pick you up for the date? But have you ever noticed, girls, when the evening is over and the date has ended, that the ding-a-ling's forgotten where you live? I mean, he wanders way off out here in the Thule someplace, gets on that little lonely country road. Then he drives off in the brush someplace, tunes in the hottest local rock and roll radio station to set the mood. Hey, and then it's not long before the two young people in automobile, you get all wrapped up in your work, oh baby. You're shortly involved in the French kissing routine, and then it's not long before the young man begins to study anatomy using the Braille system. It's at this point the young lady realizes she has a problem because her date is acting weird. I mean, he can't hardly breathe. She turns and says, John, what's the matter with you? Are you having an attack of some kind? Maybe we ought to go home, but he never wants to go home at that point in time. So a lot of gals come to me and say, come on, year out, you think you're so smart, and after all, you must have forgotten this is the 1970s, not the 1890s. And if we girls want boyfriends and dates, and you better believe we want boyfriends and dates, we have to make it with these fellows at least up to a point. So year out, if you're so intelligent, why don't you tell me as a young lady how far to get involved when I'm out dating? Hey, I can't tell you that because individually you have to live your own lives. Besides, I'm smart enough to know that at my age, and I'm older than germs, that the last thing you people want to hear from a guy like me is advice, which you once experienced. Well, now, experience is a great teacher, but sometimes you pay a very bitter price when you learn by experience. Now, you see, I believe God gave you people brains. Well, most of you anyway. And I think the good Lord wants you to use your brains, not simply when you're sitting in a classroom, but also in your social life when you're out here dating. You've got to think. But here again, it seems to me that we modern parents don't seem to have time for our children anymore. We're so hung up with our problems, you know, the high cost of living and taxes and on through the night. And it seems like sad to me that people your age couldn't sit down with your parents and have an open, honest, and intelligent conversation with them on the subject of sex or any other subject that was of interest to you without your parents getting red in the face, coughing, snorting, sneezing, fainting, screaming, and dropping dead. I believe a mother has to do more when her little daughter starts dating than to say something like this, "Now, honey, you mustn't do that because it's nasty." Because it's all so fun. And the thing that characterizes people your age is you say, man, I want to have fun. What's for kicks? Well, I think you ought to have a lot of fun while you're teenagers. Wow, that ought to be one of the most exciting times of life. All kinds of things going on, you know. But the kind of fun that a lot of kids are having as I travel this nation and observe the youth scene is tragic beyond belief. They're tubing themselves out forever. Take the drug culture as an example. All of you know what can happen to people that fool around with drugs. Yet, so many young people say, well, I'm not going to get hooked, you know. I'm careful. I'm just experimenting, you know. I want to, you know, just blow a little grass and drop a little acid and shoot a little speed and pop a few pills. Not going to hurt me. End up out here on some funny farm in a rubber room the rest of your life. Of course, you know, the number one drug problem in America today is not marijuana. It's not heroin. It's alcohol. And the hooked generation is not yours but mine. And it seems sad to me as we observe the scene. And you know, something's coming back on the high school campus these days. It was sort of cool here for a little while, but I've observed, particularly this school year, how that drinking is the big thing for a lot of teenagers these days. A lot of guys come back on Monday morning and say, boy, did I hang one on the weekend. Man, I got so drunk my own mother wouldn't have known me. And some kids go say, what's wrong with that year out? Well, I suppose if you want to spend the whole weekend puking on yourself, it's all right, you know. And I don't think any of you young men want to exactly end up a basket case because of the way you drive your cars. Fellas, I know you're good drivers. I realize that you've had several months of experience. Of course you can navigate a 90-degree turn at 100 miles an hour. I just got back from doing programs in Nebraska. You should have seen some of those kids back there in what they call the sand hills. It's all ranch country. Every night after school, they peel out on their tractors. And I don't think any of you lovely little gals want to end up mothers at this point in your life, but it happens to hundreds of thousands of little gals your age, junior and senior high school, all across the nation every year, in spite of pills, abortions, and the whole bit. You gotta think. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life, but I want to really lay some things on you. As an example, I believe there are things that complicate the man-woman relationship at this point in your life, and I want to share them with you. But look, girls, fellas, starting somewhere in their mid-teens, and it depends on individual development, give or take a few months either direction, but from somewhere around mid-teens to mid-20s, fellas are at the very peak of their sexual drive and desire they will ever be in their lives, and it doesn't mean they're nasty boys. It in fact happens to mean they're healthy, normal, and virile young men, but it complicates dating for the guy and the gal at this point in your lives, and you ought to remember that. And secondly, in American culture, girls, men approach sex 90% physically, while women approach sex 90% on the psychological side. Kids say, so what's that supposed to mean? Well, it simply means, girls, that men, and I'm talking about old men, young men, middle-aged men, girls, all kinds of men. Hey, gals, you understand that we men get excited and stimulated and turned on initially sexually by sight and women by touch, and every guy in this high school knows that. And if you young women don't believe the fellas know it, you ought to arrange to bug the boys' locker room, listen to their conversations, and you wouldn't believe what they're talking about. And it's not sports, either. If you ever saw any of the fellas hanging around some newsstand, they're not reading U.S. News and World Report. They got a copy of Playboy, the centerfold. Girls, do you understand that we men have vivid imaginations and that we get excited by what we see or what we think we see? If I unfurled up here this morning a life-size picture of a very beautiful and shapely and lovely young woman in a very brief bikini bathing suit, some of the fellas would blow their minds. In fact, some are blowing them just sitting there thinking about it. But on the other hand, if I unfurled up here this morning a life-size picture of a very handsome young man without his clothes on, I do not believe it would turn the young women on. I think they'd probably vomit, and that'd be about it. Now, girls, that's not to imply that you're not just as much of a sexual being as any guy, that you can't get this as turned on as any fellow you can. It just takes longer. It also takes longer to turn you off. Now, come on, gals. If on the way home from school tonight, you drop with your boyfriend by your home, and of course, Mama works. It's a nice choice arrangement, isn't it? Or you're out here in a parked car with some guy in a makeout session, and he's already turned on, and then you get turned on. What are you going to do, shake hands and go home? I was doing some assemblies last fall in southern Idaho. And one day I was spending some time on a campus, which I often do as the schedule permits, and I was walking down the hall on the way to a class for a rap session, and a young man come walking by wearing a sweatshirt, which is par for the course. And as he walked by, on the back of the sweatshirt was an inscription with big bold print, and I naturally read it, and I nearly dropped my teeth. For it said, help stamp out virginity. Well, after I got over the initial shock of seeing a sweatshirt like that being worn around a high school campus, I decided, well, you know, here's a very honest young man, for at least he's letting every girl on this campus know about his intentions. In fact, the more I thought of it, I decided sweatshirts like that ought to be issued on every high school campus in America, and it'd be demanded that certain fellows wear them so the girls could say, aha, I notice what you've got in mind. Of course, I realize East Valley High School doesn't have any guys like that. Want to vote on it? Well, you know, later on, this boy with a sweatshirt walked up to me in the hall with a group of younger fellows as his hero worshippers, and he says, you're out, I want to talk to you. I said, fine. We walked into an empty classroom. He said, "I'll have you know, Mr. Yearout, that I did not like your assembly." I said, "Well, I can believe that." And he said, "Furthermore, I did not agree with it." I said, "I can also believe that. Now, let me ask you a question." "Yeah, what's that?" I said, "Come on, fella, are you really good with women?" Says, "I do all right." And all his little buddies says, yeah, man, he does all right. He tells us every morning what he did the night before. "Girls, I'm going to let you in on one of the most carefully guarded of all male secrets. Sorry, gentlemen. Girls, ever since the human race has been on this earth, we men have tried to convince you women that you're all a bunch of gossips, and we're not. And that is a bunch of phony baloney, because men, both old and young, gossip twice as much as women, only we lie a lot." "You know, I seldom spend much time on the campus, and I don't have a girl or two come to me with this kind of a story. Mr. Yearout, I went out with this kid who thinks he's really great with girls. He tried some funny business with me, so I punched him in the mouth, said, 'Take me home,' he did. Then he came back to school the next day and spread the word." I said, "What, that you punched him in the mouth?" Then the girl usually starts crying. "Are you kidding? That dirty guy came back and went all over the campus telling a lot of things that supposedly happened on that date that didn't happen and just ruined my reputation. Why did he do that?" I'm going to tell you why, girls. Hey, every young woman in this audience, I would assume sometime around your 12th birthday, and here again it depends on individual development, give or take a few months either direction, but gals, somewhere around your 12th birthday, each of you had a very definite biological, physiological happening in your life that I assume your mother prepared you for. And when it occurred, it told you something about yourself. It identified for you the fact, "I am a woman." It helped you to understand something about your femininity and your sexuality. Now, the guys in this audience have not had that kind of an experience, I don't think. So they're all running around campus saying, "Golly, I wonder if I'm a man. Gee whiz." Really, I don't think you young ladies realize what a problem it is for boys growing up in American culture to identify their masculinity and their manhood. How does a fella prove he's a man? Well, it's kind of interesting to watch the way some of them try to prove their manhood. Some of them go around like muscle-bound monsters. "You want a fat lip? I'll punch you in the mouth. I can whip anybody. They're bullies. They're always fighting." Now, gorillas do that, too. But we put them in cages and feed them bananas. Other guys try to prove their manhood driving their cars like idiots. You can see them every night after school squealing out of the parking lot, laying rubber for a mile and a half. Other guys try to prove their manhood getting drunk. Others excel in sports, and some guys do all four. Really, how does a boy learn about sex in American culture? I said that one day, and a kid said, "Older brother." Oh, beautiful. I want to tell you, older brothers are psychopathic liars on that subject. There's nothing an older fellow would rather do than get some younger boys around and brag. "Hey, you punks, come here. You want me to tell you about this chick I took out the other night?" Yeah. So this guy goes into a blow-by-blow account of what he wished would have happened and didn't. And these little guys are standing there, "Ooh, wow, man, woo, jiminy, ooh," you know. When he gets all through with this line of baloney, these little guys say, "Man, I never turned a girl on like that." Well, he hasn't either, but it sure sounds like fun. So these little guys go out and try and get beat half to death. Really, how do we learn about sex in American culture as fellows? We start in the sixth grade telling each other dirty jokes we can't understand. Then we begin sneaking the old man's copy of Playboy, and we can't understand that either. Now, it's interesting to watch younger teenage guys as they just move into the teen years, you know, around 13, 12, 13, along in that area. They run around in packs, like dogs. And you just watch a group of boys that age. What are they doing? They're shoving each other and pushing each other and flexing their muscles and talking dirty and cussing. And one thing that characterizes them, they hate girls. But you see, the problem is that when the guy hits the peak of his sex drive, and it doesn't happen to all of them at the same time or it wouldn't create the problem, and it can happen quite early for some and quite late for others, and the first guy in a group of fellows who are all friends who suddenly gets interested in girls when before they've all together hated girls has got a big problem, because he wants the continued approval of his friends at the same time he likes girls. So, you know, he's, "I hate girls, ooh, ooh, wow," you know, and it's a big problem. And girls, I don't believe you realize how threatening it is for the average boy in this culture when for the first time he has to ask a girl for a date. It scares the fat out of you. And you girls are so mean. You know, here's some kid been eyeballing you around the campus for weeks, and one day he walks up and says, golly, you're cute. Woo! Man, you know, I was wondering if you and I could go on a date. Gee, you know. And you stand there and laugh in his face and say, what, me go with a clod like you? You set him back 10 years. Girls, please, if a guy asks you for a date, why can't you be kind and say something like, I'm very flattered you asked. No. I mean, it's up to you whether you want to go or not, but don't put the guy down. A lot of girls come to me and say, Mr. Yearout, we have some neat guys around this campus who never take girls out. And if we try to engage them in the conversation or smile at them in the hall, they blush and run the other way. Other gals say, gee, you know, I go with this guy, I've gone with him for 6 months, and he hasn't even kissed me goodnight at the door. How do I get him started? Well, honey, I have only one suggestion. Before you start, you make sure you know where the stop button is. But you see, we're all different. And it's tragic that a lot of boys in American culture today have been so threatened by all of the dirty jokes they've heard and the bragging of certain guys that they think that the man-woman relationship always involves sex. And a lot of guys say, well, I'm just not up to that kind of stuff, so they just don't bother taking a girl out. And sometimes it even drives guys into the drug scene. And this is why a lot of guys, I think, are disrespectful of girls and treat them rather rudely, because they're trying to impress the other guys that, after all, they're a real man. They think that that somehow means manhood. And it doesn't mean manhood at all. And it's bad news. Now, you know, another problem is when a guy takes a girl out for the first time on a date, he's never had a date before maybe, and he comes back to campus the next day, he's apt to be cornered by other fellows who say, hey, I saw you out with that chick last night, how was it? He says, well, how was what? Well, come on, how was it? You think he's going to stand there and say, she punched me in the mouth? Look, girls, we men have very fragile egos, and you better learn that now, and you just love gals to fracture our egos. Shame on you, you know? So when a guy is being cornered in the hall by some other fellas and they want to know what went on the date, at this point, he's apt to forget all about the girl. He's not even thinking about her or her reputation. He's only thinking about his fragile ego. So he puts together a couple of dirty stories to try to impress the fellas, and the process shoots the girl down the tube reputation-wise. Guys, I want to tell you something, and I hope you'll hear me very well. Gentlemen, do you understand that girls are fellow human beings and not playthings? Want a cookie? I said that in front of 1,800 students in a big high school a few weeks ago. And when the program was over, as usually happens, a lot of young people came to talk to me. And among them was this real rough-looking kid. I've never seen such a tough-looking guy on any high school campus in this country. He looked like he'd been through 7 wars and won them all. He walked up to me and he said, Yearout, I want to talk to you, and right now. And I said, yes, sir. And we walked off in the corner, and he said, I don't know how to tell you this, Mr. Yearout. I'm 18 years old. I've been taking chicks out since I was 14. He said, you know, when you made that statement in your assembly that girls are fellow human beings and not playthings, you hit me right between the eyes. He said, it's really embarrassing to admit, but that's the first time in my life, Mr. Yearout, that I had ever thought of a girl in any other way than that she was an object for my fun, pleasure, and gratification. He said, can I shake your hand? He nearly broke it. He said, I had a chick lined up tonight with one thing on my mind, and I've already broken the date. He said, thanks, Mr. Yearout, for helping me understand I ought to respect girls. Now, I know a lot of guys grow up in homes maybe where the father has no respect for the mother, and she gets treated like the dirty laundry. And I think it's sad that in this culture that a woman or girl can't walk down the street of a community without in many cases a carload of guys going by, rolling down the window and yelling out some obscene remark or giving some filthy sign in the name of what they believe is manhood. Boy, isn't that manhood when 6 guys can insult one woman? Now that really proves something, doesn't it? About now, some of you fellows are getting rather uptight and saying, come on, you're out, you're putting it all on us. What about girls? Yes, respect is a two-way street. I was back in Iowa a year ago doing assemblies, and after one of the programs, a little gal came up to talk to me, and she had been wonderfully endowed by the good Lord when she was put together, because she had all the right parts, all in the right places, and believe me, they were all the right dimensions. She wanted to enhance what God had given her, so she was wearing the tightest dress I have ever seen on a woman. I can't imagine how she got it on unless, first of all, she greased herself. The dress had a low V-cut neck about like this jacket, and I think she was wearing an uplift bra, and this is the way she walked up to me. Mr. Yearout, I've got a problem. I said, honey, you've got 2 problems. I said, what is your problem? She said, Mr. Yount, the guys around here must be the dirtiest high school fellows in the state of Iowa. I said, why would you make such a ridiculous statement? Because, she says, everywhere I go around this campus, the fellows are always making dirty, nasty, filthy remarks to me, insulting me, and I'm getting tired of it, and why do they do that? I said, you mean to stand there and tell me you do not know? No. I immediately concluded the only one stupider than that dear little girl was her ignorant mother. I said, well, for starters, honey, why don't you get a needle and thread and sew up your dress? She started to blush. I said, look, I'm not putting you down. You're a beautiful little girl, but don't you know how you come on to man? No.